Welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I am your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. To my core, I believe that teachers are critical for helping students reach their creative potential. And so that's what we talk about on this podcast. And before we get started, I just want to share a word from our sponsors, Wipebook. It's Wipebook. I always fail to pronounce the P because I have West Coast accent, which tends to be a little bit on the lazy side with pronunciation. But it is Wipebook. So let's share it. Are flip charts a part of your teacher toolkit for distance learning? Cool, but the problem with conventional flip charts is this. Number one, they are awfully expensive. And number two, they are not eco-friendly. One use and they are done. Check out this cost-effective and interesting alternative that we just recently tested called the Wipebook flip chart. It is a marriage between a conventional flip chart and a whiteboard. And it comes in 20 surfaces per set, 10 double-sided sheets, one side plain and the other side a graph, you know, for all you math folks. Each sheet is 2 feet by 3 feet. It also integrates with the free Wipebook Scan app, which you can download from the App Store or Google Play so that you can digitize and share your work to Google Drive and other popular cloud storage options. For all you teachers that are tired of wasting paper and want to give Wipebook Flipchart a try as either a reusable flipchart or a whiteboard alternative, you can check out wipebook.com/creativeclassroom for up to 30% off your first purchase. They sent this to me and I absolutely love it. I've been using it in my class. I've been using it with the trainings that I do with teachers at the K-12 level. I just love being able to make the thinking visible. I love being able to make charts and graphs when I want to, but I can also sketch things, you know, like you would on a whiteboard, and then do vocabulary like you would on a flip chart. And so I use it all the time. I love it. I think it's a great tool for virtual learning. It also is a great tool for a physical classroom when you're doing, you know, blended learning or you're doing hybrid learning, especially those of you who have kind of both at the same time. So check it out again, wipebook.com/creativeclassroom. With the new year coming up, there's a good chance that you're coming up with some New Year's resolutions. Now, personally, I like the idea of coming up with a few really easy New Year's resolutions just to make it easier when I bomb in another area. For example, one of my New Year's resolutions this year is I'm going to binge watch at least one TV show. I know it's going to be really hard to pull off, but I think I'm going to be able to do it. I think this year I might also come up with something a little bit harder, though. Maybe I'm going to work out twice a day. I've been working out 5 times a week, and that's worked pretty well for me. Maybe I'll try to up it. I don't really know yet what I'm going to do. But I know that a part of what I'm going to aim for is going to be process-oriented goals, which is what I want to get into. One of the things that I notice about most New Year's resolutions is that they focus on things being specific, tangible products that you do. You know, like I want to run a marathon, I want to write a novel, I want to lose a certain number of pounds. You get the idea. That's often sort of the end product kind of goal. And while there's nothing wrong with these types of goals, there's another type of goal that is just as important, process-oriented goals. These are the goals that allow us to develop habits and rituals. And I've been thinking a lot lately about this idea of creative habits. I might do a blog series and a podcast series on this. But I don't think it's necessarily just habits that we're going for. It's momentum. Momentum combines habit, right? Continuing to work in a specific direction with progression and performance, right? So you can imagine that momentum is this combination of going in the same direction. It has this directionality to it, right? That's the habit piece. But improving your skill, improving your performance, getting better at something, that is the other side. So, you know, on a graph, that would be, you know, the y-axis. And what you end up with is this sense of momentum in terms of getting continually better by developing habits, but also improving your performance. And a major way that you do that is through setting process-oriented goals. Now, here's a brief overview of the two types of goals. Product goals focus on the destination, while process goals focus on the journey. Product goals tend to be short-term, but process goals tend to be long-term. Product goals are project-oriented, which is, again, there's nothing wrong with it. You want to finish those projects. That can be highly motivational. But process goals are designed to build habits and to increase momentum. Product goals stick to firm deadlines, while process goals stick to consistent routines. Product goals define success by the completion of great work. By contrast, process goals define success as growth in one's skills and abilities. So they're very different approaches to how you set goals. And again, most of the people I talk to when I ask about their goals, they tend to be less about forming habits and more about, you know, those tangible results of the end result, the product. So what does this look like? Well, if your goal involves running, a product goal might be finishing a marathon, while a process goal might be committing to run for 45 minutes a day. If you're a writer, a product goal might be publishing a novel, while a process goal might be a daily habit of 500 words per day. Neither approach is wrong. I want to be real clear about that. Both product goals and process goals are both important for success. We need to finish projects and build lasting habits at the same time. I have a little video explanation, a sketch video on product goals versus process goals. You can check it out at spencervideos.com. But for the longest time, I focused on product-oriented goals. These goals were outcome-based with a strong emphasis on finishing specific tasks by specific dates. An example might be, I'm going to write one chapter every 3 days, or I'm going to post 4 blog posts per week, which I don't do anymore. Just to clarify, these goals were not extrinsic. They weren't based on success or failures or anything like that. It wasn't like, I want to write a best-selling novel. These were deeply internal, and they were things I had control over as a maker, as a teacher, as a designer. But they were still focused on the end product of what I was creating or what I was doing. And these product-oriented goals worked on some level. I was highly productive. However, when I focused entirely on finishing the task, I didn't enjoy the journey. Also, when a task took longer than anticipated, I would rush through the next phase and the quality would begin to diminish. On a more personal level, when I experienced unexpected interruptions, I found myself getting irritated by those moments of being unproductive. Stare at the stars, there's no time for that. I've got a chapter that I promised I would be done with by tomorrow. Play an impromptu game of Uno with the kids? No, I have a project to finish. And it was not only that, it was the fact that I would often rush through the end to meet a deadline and the quality wasn't as good. I didn't give myself the space to dive into something more creative or to iterate or to improve. I didn't give myself enough revision time. And what I was doing is I was pushing these product goals, and I wasn't giving myself the permission to have a delay in when I actually, you know, finished the product, whatever the finished product was. Now, a few years ago, I embraced a different approach, process-oriented goals. Instead of saying I'm going to run 25 miles this week, I would say I'm setting aside 40 minutes, 5 days a week to go running. If I run slower, that's fine. If I run faster, okay. If something comes up and I can't get it done, that's fine. It's not about mileage. It's about setting a routine and forming a habit. So instead of saying I'm going to do 2 videos per week, I'm saying I want to spend about a half an hour a day working on my videos. Some of these are going to be, you know, live style, you know, talking head videos. Some of these are going to be sketch videos. But it was a focus on creating a habit of making videos. Now, I had weeks last year when I knocked out two or three videos, and other stretches when I went two or three weeks without posting a new video. But it didn't matter. My goal was to improve my craft of creating videos. In other words, I'm being less disciplined about the specific results, but more disciplined about my schedule. Because I'm doing fewer projects, I have more flexibility when urgent tasks come up and I have to change my plans. Moreover, I am able to work more leisurely on creative projects. There's no pressure attached to it. When I placed the journey above the destination, I discovered that my goals were not destinations at all. They'd become habits. They were sacred rituals that enabled me to do creative work that I love without thinking too hard about the results. Now, for a few months, I focused solely on process-oriented goals. Within a few weeks, though, I felt less motivated. True, there was less pressure, but there was also less focus. I started fudging it a little bit, working not quite as hard on my allotted time that I was, you know, giving to writing or whatever. I learned something about myself, and this was really important. I need deadlines. I thrive with deadlines. I need project goals. I enjoy the satisfaction of finishing specific projects. I was the most motivated to run when I trained for a marathon, and I am more motivated to write when I am writing a book. I can tell you right now that, yes, my goal in lifting weights is to lift weights 3 to 5 times a week, and I'll set up a specific process-oriented goal, but I'm going to set goals for increasing my weight or increasing my reps. I just know that that's who I am. Whether I like it or not, I have specific deadlines and product-oriented goals that keep me driven. It's important to me. So both are necessary. Most projects require some kind of planning. There are times when specific tasks just have to be done, such as a syllabus for an upcoming course or the prep work for an upcoming keynote that I'm doing or a training. And in these moments, I still set product-oriented goals. But I have to have the process goals that help me form habits. In other words, these two types of goals are actually complementary. It's not that one's better than the other. When I am doing long-term work with flexible deadlines, I am going to stick to a lot of process goals. However, there are moments when I have an exciting short-term project and I just have to allow for a little bit of a chaotic schedule and let my habits get screwed up just a tiny bit as I throw myself into a project. I've learned, for example, that when it comes to writing a book, I am not the kind of person that can write a book doing 500 words a day. It's just not who I am. My first draft, to be able to remember it and immerse myself in it, is to take 2 or 3 weeks and only work on that project. It's the only project I work on, and I just binge write. And then I set up a habit of revision where I go back to that process goal, right? In the past, though, I had packed my schedule with these product-oriented goals, and now I set deadline-driven goals for every creative work I tackle, but I do less creative work. So it's important that I try to strive as much as I can toward having these process-oriented goals that drive my daily schedule, but having some product-oriented goals to keep me motivated and excited, and then to also actually finish the projects that I'm going to be doing. I mention this because if I wasn't careful and I only focused on process-oriented goals, I could easily end up being somebody who worked on a novel all year long and never finished it, right? Or I could be someone who just gave up on projects whenever I felt like it, as long as I was continuing to work on that, you know, the habit of the process-oriented goals. So we need both. All right, so what does this actually have to do with classroom teaching? Well, here are a few thoughts on what this looks like for having students set their own goals. Number one, encourage students to set both process and product goals. Often schools focus on setting academic goals, but there's value in helping students set goals around habits. For example, you might have students set goals on how many minutes they want to read each day or how many pages they read. That is a process-oriented goal. Take on number two, take on a few major projects that require product goals that you want to focus on, but limit the number of projects and give more time and attention to the process-oriented goals. Number three, choose a few process-oriented goals that you can monitor on a regular basis and create little celebrations for those, create a sense of progress with those with, you know, using progress bars or badges, things like that. Number four, set a few product and process goals as a class and then find ways to monitor these goals collectively and collaboratively each week. There's power in setting goals as a community, especially in a time of social isolation and distance. The final thought is you might want to gamify this process. Now, here's what I mean. If you think about it, video games are addicting. Whether you're playing a simple game on your phone or a complex game with rich world building on a gaming console, there is something inherent in video games that draw us in, and this is by design. Game designers have crafted the user experience to make gameplay habitual. And it's not just game designers. Social media apps use notifications and badges and metrics to get us to spend more time on their platforms. Health apps use game elements to get us active and to eat right. I mean, right now, I care way too much about closing all three rings on my Apple Watch. I know it's ridiculous, but I care and it works. Now, what if we use these same principles of game design to gamify creative habits in real life? Here are a few ideas. Make it easy to start. Games work because the barrier of entry is low. Similarly, developing creative habits, you might want to start with an easier goal. So you might take 10 minutes a day learning to play a new instrument, or you might start by writing just 100 words per day. And then as you go on, you incrementally add to it. You can also start off with smaller projects that allow you to hit the finish line faster. There's actually a strong rationale for this. By making our own goals easier to attain and experiencing some big wins early on, we gain creative confidence and are able to stick with those habits over time. As you improve, you can increase the challenge incrementally. Here you can create levels for yourself where you can hit benchmarks and increase the challenge level. And this allows you to keep the challenge level just above the skill level. There's an interesting thing in flow theory, and they have this flow channel model where they show that if the skill level is too low, you'll experience worry and anxiety. When the challenge is just above the skill level, though, you're likely to hit a state of flow. And that's where you zone out and you just get lost in your work. And that's what you're aiming for with this. As you go, you can track progress. You might have a progress bar or a series of tally marks. You might create badges for yourself. Another option is to use, you know, like three jars with marbles, and you move the marbles from haven't started to finished. You can also keep a streak that builds on each day, and this builds momentum. If you've ever played Pokemon Go, and I do, I'm a nerd. I'm about to get to level 41, so, you know, don't be jealous. You've seen how they keep track of consecutive days. Runners will often do a run streak. The same thing is true of certain people who do writing and painting and reading. When you keep track of a streak, you build momentum. As you succeed, you might even create small rewards or celebrations for yourself as you hit key benchmarks. You might also need to create visual cues. On phones, we have alerts and notifications for games, but you can create notifications by creating visual cues in your physical environment. So if you want to read 50 books in a year, leave books throughout your home, on the coffee table, by your nightstand, by your computer, and maybe a few other places. Just to make things that, just make sure that things are sanitary, right? Like we all know people that take, you know, the books to the restroom, and just be careful with that. You might also put a book in your car, in your backpack. You get the point. Put books everywhere. Those create visual cues. You might also use sticky notes with reminders of your commitment to a creative habit. And finally, you might want to join a community. Gaming often includes social interaction. As a maker, you might create a mastermind group with fellow makers who nerd out on their craft. And this can give you a sense of belonging and help you take creative risks. In the end, there is no single formula for developing creative habits. By using elements of gamification, you can make those habits stick. So, what are your process and product goals for this year? What goals would you like to pursue with your students? Keep a journal. She schedules time. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts? Again, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.